Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Teal Time Podcast. I'm Jonathan Heater, and I'm joined by a very special guest, David Teal.
Welcome to March.
Yeah, we'll call this a pre-conference tournament Teal Time.
Yeah, although some conference tournaments are in full force.
Yeah, it's two of the most fascinating weeks of college athletics. And then, well, I mean, if you count the NCAA tournament, it's a month of...
Yeah, 6 weeks.
Is this your favorite time of the year?
It is. I mean, I love college football, don't get me wrong, and the lead into the playoff and the bowls. But this is so much more condensed. You know, in football, you have that lag between the end of the regular season and the postseason. With basketball, you go right from the end to the beginning of the postseason, and it's you hit overdrive.
All right, let's do a little segment I'm going to call Getting to Know David Teal. So you have covered basketball in the ACC for a long time,
yeah,
which has obviously over time enhanced your interest in the league, and it's something you've been around. Where does your start and love of basketball come? Has it grown because you've covered the ACC, or did you always grow up really interested in basketball?
Well, I was a average to below average athlete as a kid, but the one sport at which I was marginally competent was basketball because I was fairly tall for my age. So that's part of it. And then when I was almost 10 years old, we moved from New Jersey, where my exposure to college basketball was essentially once in a week Ivy League games with Princeton and Columbia. They were the powers back then. We moved to Baltimore. And right around that time, a bald guy from Norfolk, Virginia, named Lefty Drizel, became the head coach of the University of Maryland. And like everyone else, I was enthralled because he was an entertainer. He was a force of nature. And those games were on TV. And then, you know, you morph into the early to mid 70s when I'm in junior high and high school. And then it's Lefty's great teams, and it's NC State and David Thompson, and it's Dean and Phil Ford at Carolina. And it was just riveting stuff.
Does he know that he plays a part in your love?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Lefty and I have talked about it. I've teased him. Of course, he doesn't remember, nor should he. But I've often told him that I am the... not one, but two-time free throw shooting champion of the Lefty Drizel basketball camp at the University of Maryland for whatever my age group was those 2 years that I was a camper.
Well, there's zero chance he'll hear this, but he does read the Pilot and the Daily Press.
Yeah, I don't think Lefty's listening to the podcast.
He is an avid reader of the Pilot, I know.
Oh, he is.
I've heard... the Pilot Sports Editor, or the Pilot and Daily Press Sports Editor, Jamie Frankenberry, tell me stories of Lefty calling.
Oh, yeah. Well, I get phone calls occasionally from Lefty, too.
About stories.
And that's, by the way, that made it so rewarding for me last year to be at the Final Four in San Antonio when it was announced that Lefty was being inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, and to see him there and to reminisce with him and to see the affection of former players such as Tom McMillan who flew in for the announcement. It was really cool.
It's funny. It's a tie that binds you and I too, because I had a intense love of college basketball, but it was Lefty coming to Georgia State.
There you go.
That really put that program on the map. Took them to the NCAA tournament, and they upset Wisconsin and played Maryland in the second round that year, which was my sophomore year in college.
Well, and then Lefty, before Georgia State, coached at my alma mater.
That's right.
James Madison.
Yeah, yeah. So it's fair to say that while if you've listened to this podcast, you know that David has a quite robust love of sports, but basketball is your first love?
Yeah, it was
your biggest love.
Yeah, it was my first love, and you know, I love March. Selection Sunday and ACC tournament weekend, and then the anticipation of how the bracket's going to play out and making your picks. And, you know, part of me, you know, eventually, I don't know when, I'll retire, presumably, and I'll be able to sit at home and watch the tournament unfold in real time rather than be at an arena and catch the occasional glimpse of a game here and there in between what I'm covering. I can't count the number of times I've been in an arena at halftime of the game I'm doing, and you're in the back in the workroom. They've got TVs all over the place, and you're watching the end of another game, and somebody on the last second try, you're just going, ah! And there's just this scream, primal scream collectively in the press room because everybody's into it. And getting back to Lefty for just a second, then just the symmetry of it all, the first ACC tournament I covered was the only ACC tournament that the Hander won.
Huh.
1984.
It's funny, you mentioned it's one of those, no one feels sorry for us.
Oh, heck no. Nor should they, by the way.
Right. Because, you know, for every tournament game you missed, you were in the pit when NC State won the national title.
That was
right?
My first Final Four.
And you were in the gym in Raleigh when the first ever 16 seed beat a number one seed.
Charlotte.
That's right. That's right. Charlotte last year.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many memories that you've seen in person too that of outweigh the ones you've missed.
Dude, I was courtside for Christian Leitner's shot against Kentucky.
Well, I mean, that's arguably the most famous shot in the history of the tournament, right?
Oh, it's not even close.
So yeah, I know it's funny that shot has so much interest in history and love, and because of the two teams that were playing. And it overshadows the Mario Chalmers shot, right?
Yeah.
Or the Villanova shot.
Yeah, I was not at the Final Four for the Chris Jenkins shot. I was in San Antonio for Mario Chalmers shot.
And those two aren't on the same wavelength as the Leitner shot. Yeah. And those two won national titles.
Well, Chalmers got him to overtime.
That's right. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. But it was a ridiculous shot. And the Jenkins one beat North Carolina.
Yes, but it. If memory serves, the game was tied.
I can't remember.
When he made it. I don't know if that's a miss and you lose shot like Leitner's was.
But it was a pure buzzer beater, right?
North
Carolina
yes.
didn't have an option.
No.
And Leitner's obviously was too. And you know, there's so much that goes on with that play. I mean, the inbounds pass, the baseball pass.
The fact that Kentucky didn't guard Grant Hill.
The reaction of Thomas Hill, which is one of the most famous sports reactions in history, right?
Yeah.
I hope that you can catch our passion for this tournament because there's nothing like the first 2 days of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah,
it is my favorite 2 days in sports. And you had mentioned being in a press room when things like that happen. I covered a lot of Masters, as we've talked about, and I've lorded over your head.
Yeah, because I've never been. Yeah, no, and you should lord it.
But, you know, there's something about watching a Sunday at the Masters on television. But when you're in the press room, obviously you can't follow everything around the course. But when you're in the press room and you see all these jaded sports writers just have audible reactions to the big putts coming down the stretch, mm-hmm. it's actually kind of cool to be in that situation and not be watching it at home on television.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's move on to...
Yeah, we're not even to the NCAA tournament.
Let's move on to the tournament and conference tournaments. I guess a good place to start is Virginia Tech's somewhat shocking upset of Duke. I know that they have beaten Duke at home regularly over the last few years.
This will be third straight year this year.
And Zion Williamson wasn't playing.
Correct.
But... still pretty heavy odds. I think it was like a 8 or 9 point spread. No, mm-hmm. It wasn't that big.
I don't think it was quite that big.
It was
big,
like no. 5 or 6.
Yeah.
But everyone assumed that Duke was going to go in there. I mean, it's not like Virginia Tech's at full strength.
Right. No Justin Robinson.
And Virginia Tech had their game of the year, right?
They did. They played very well, absolutely deserved to win, and you know, hit big shots at the end, and then I forget who missed the three for Duke that rattled in and out that would have tied it. And I don't know if it
may have been Reddish.
Yeah. Yeah, from the left wing right there in front of Duke's bench. But no, Castle was great that night, and the Hokies.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the atmosphere.
Oh, it was fabulous.
The Enter Sandman a cappella ending. I know that happens at Lane a lot, but it was extra loud there.
Yes, it was. Well, because there you got a roof.
Yeah.
And it just reverberates. It's that's a very underrated home court advantage.
Well, partly because they haven't been good, right? Like, no one thinks of it as one of these great gems of the ACC because they historically haven't been very good, right?
Well, they've been decent, but they haven't been in the league that long. It's not like they have this long tradition and background just from a national perspective.
But was it seen as a tough place to play in the Big East?
Not in the Big East, because they were terrible in the Big East.
You go back to the Metro?
Yeah, Metro in A-10 days, absolutely.
Really?
Yes.
But, I mean, it's hot in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's
not Cameron hot, but it gets warm.
But it's a unique gym, right, in that there's not, like, multiple – a lot of gyms you see, like, multiple decks or multiple tiers, and this is basically just straight up, right?
Yeah, it's an old barn.
But, yeah, it seemed very intense atmosphere. On that's what I got off of watching on television.
Yeah.
And when it comes through on television, you know it's crazy in the gym.
Yeah, and they feed off that, and they feed off Buzz's energy, and it all worked that night.
All right, so you've seen Duke now without Zion. I mean, you saw him a couple times with Zion.
Watched him last night.
I said last week that I didn't think they could win a national title without him. You pumped the brakes a little bit on that, but now having seen them in person without him, is there something to that?
I'm more convinced that you're right after watching him last night. I mean, you beat Wake Forest by one at home. Now, I know you're looking ahead to North Carolina. I get that. But it's your final home game of the season. You're playing a Wake Forest team that lost to Houston Baptist.
There was a word, by the way, there, after Houston. A loss to Houston's not so big a deal.
No.
A loss to Houston Baptist, a little different category.
Correct. And, you know, I don't know if Danny Manning's going to get fired by the new athletic director that Wake Forest just hired, John Curry. But
the clearly, former Tennessee AD.
Yeah.
Who was fired after the botched football coaching search last
former
year.
Former Kansas State AD, hired Bruce Weber out there. Worked pretty darn well, hasn't
it? Yeah,
that's a good one. But, you know, the Deacons program's in disarray. That's a game. Duke was a 24-25-point favorite last night. Was down 10 early in the second half. The Blue Devils aren't quite right. And a lot of it, obviously, is Zion. Trey Jones's game is off a little bit on both ends of the floor, but he's especially on the offensive
definitely
floor.
An offensive liability right now.
Yeah, it seems like it to me.
So you're down to three hands on offense, really.
And Reddish is so inconsistent.
Did White make a three last night?
He did. He made two.
Oh, so there you go. He broke that.
Oh, yeah. No, at one point.
Did he make one against Virginia Tech?
No, but there was one. There was a game in between.
Oh, Miami.
Yeah. Where, because he had missed 27 in a row, and then he made his next five.
I see. I didn't know about the Miami game. Yeah. I know they won that one pretty handily.
They did.
So that, I mean, after Virginia Tech, after North Carolina. So, all right, let me slow down. Go back to North Carolina. A case can be made that when you lose a player like that, there's a shock, right? It takes some time.
Yeah, and it happened in game. So, yeah, there's definitely a shock.
They go back. They go up to the Carrier Dome, and they win. In a very hyped game, the largest on-campus crowd in the history of college basketball, right? They go to Castle.
We'll come back to the Carrier Dome in a minute, I'm sure.
A place they've lost the last 2 years, and they lose.
Mm-hmm.
And then they blow out Miami, and then the nail-biter against Wake. there's no excuse now that they don't know what they're doing. They should have a plan without Zion.
And I'm sure they do.
They have two of the top four or five recruits in the country still in their starting lineup. And if you go to Jones, probably three of the top 10 or so.
Correct.
There's no reason they should be in a game against Wake Forest.
Nope.
They still have more talent most nights on the floor. Their top-end talent is better than anyone they're going to play between Barrett and Reddish. And the full starting five is still going to be as talented as almost anybody they face in the league.
Yeah. Fascinating game Saturday night in Chapel Hill.
I mean, do you want to bet that they're going to win that game?
No.
Carolina's playing really well, right?
Yes, they are.
And Coby White has become sort of – he was in the shadow of these guys coming into the season, and he's not going to win ACC Rookie of the Year, but I'd put him at third place, right?
Yeah.
Behind Zion and Barrett.
Yes.
He's been outstanding, particularly of late. I think the other night he made like five threes in the first couple minutes of a game, four or five threes in a row.
Against Clemson.
Yeah. He was just unconscious.
Yeah. Just killed Clemson.
Yeah. So we'll get to Carolina in a minute. But how much trouble is Duke in, period?
Krzyzewski said last night after the game, Zion's coming back. He doesn't think it's going to be for Carolina, but he anticipates him for the ACC tournament.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Why would you bring him back for the tournament?
For the ACC tournament?
Yeah.
To get him ready for the NCAA tournament. You got to get him some reps.
But if he's got a leg issue and you are playing him night after night, you have to be cautious, right?
Oh, yeah.
If he comes back. Like, you can't play him 38 minutes.
No, but I don't think they're going to bring him back until he's ready to go 30.
So you think that if he's ready, say they're the 3 seed, right? They get the bye, but you still got to win, what, 3 in a row?
Yeah.
To win the ACC tournament and in consecutive nights.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a lower leg injury, that's a knee injury, that's an issue, right? 3 straight nights, if you're playing 29 minutes a game?
That's up to their medical staff. I do not know.
Because conceivably, he'll be able to take it easy in the first round of the NCAA tournament. They're going to be at least a 2 seed. Probably, I don't know. Actually, I wouldn't say probably anymore a 1 seed, but at least a 2 seed. So you're going to be able to take it probably pretty easy in the first round.
They've lost as a 2 seed before.
I know they have. But you take it easy with the idea that if you have to ratchet it up, I mean, you can. And then, you know, you have the second round game, which you can't. There's never a game in the second round where you totally want to go into cruise control. There's too many variables there.
No.
But so you get the sense he'll be back for the ACC tournament in some capacity. And
I'm just going off what Krzyzewski said last night. I'm taking him at his word.
Well, that makes the ACC tournament a lot more fascinating, right?
Sorry,
the ACC tournament's plenty fascinating.
No, it absolutely makes it more fascinating. And then you add the Justin Robinson factor with Virginia Tech. When is he coming back? Is he going to play Friday night in his home finale and on his senior night against Miami? Or is he going to return for the ACC tournament?
What do you get the sense on that?
I mean, I think nobody's offering any information. But I think ideal scenario, you'd like him to get a little run on senior night just so he can get his due. But again, that's not a situation you're going to rush. Especially you're playing Miami. It's a team you should beat with or without Justin Robinson.
They're bad.
Yeah. They won last night at home against Pitt, but that's here nor there. Pitt's really, really down right now. But, you know, the Hokies are in almost all likelihood going to be the 5 seed at the ACC tournament. So there's not a whole lot on the line. But if he's ready to go, you'd like to get him a little bit of run before they open up play in Charlotte on Wednesday.
This was my thought a few weeks ago, and you tended to agree with it. So I want to bring it back up and see what your thoughts are now. With depth issues, and Virginia Tech has being down, at the time they were down Horn and Robinson, And I had mentioned maybe that the end goal isn't the ACC championship because if you get those guys back and you burn through, you know, 4 or 5 nights, it may not, you know, be your best course of action coming up with the tournament. And you tended, I think, to agree a little bit that the end goal is the tournament, the NCAA tournament, not because they're probably not going to win the ACC tournament.
Especially now.
Do you still think that's true?
It's not a team built to win 4 games in 4 days. You know, especially, I mean, even if Justin Robinson is just coming back, he's not going to be, you would think, at 100% let's go mode. And the Hokies weren't terribly deep with him. I mean, you saw him last night. I don't know how much of the game you watched between Virginia Tech and Florida State. I mean, the Hokies almost stole that one.
Yeah, they got smoked in overtime, but
they did, but they were up 14 at halftime and couldn't nurse it to the finish line. And I don't like to get on officials, but there's no doubt that Kerry Blackshear got a couple rough calls last night, which got him into foul trouble and eventually fouled him out. And you talk about a team lacking depth. Well, you take Blackshear out of the mix, and they have no depth and no size against the deepest, biggest team in the league,
yeah,
which is Florida State. But yet, for some preposterous reason, even with Blackshear glued to the bench, the Seminoles are hoisting threes early in the clock. And I'm sitting, I'm looking at my wife going, what in the hell are they thinking? I mean, it was – Florida State's shot selection last night was about as baffling as it could be. But then sheer manpower took over in overtime.
Well, if you lose Blackshear and you're small, you know, usually the best way to work with a small team is to run, right? You got to get up and down the court. And they just – they don't have the depth to run a whole lot, right?
No.
So was last night's game in Tallahassee a net positive, or what do you take from that?
It's not a positive because you lost and you maybe should have won. I mean, you're up 2 touchdowns at half. You ought to be able to get that thing done. But I think it is yet another sign of how well they have adjusted without Justin Robinson. They've already beaten Duke and NC State without him, you know, ranked teams, and almost beat a top 14 team last night on the road.
Is Buzz, he's going to get some consideration for Coach of the Year in the
Absolutely
league.
Absolutely has to.
Is he the guy?
I don't know. If they'd won last night, I think my vote would have been decided. But you look around the league, to me, the 3 leading candidates are Buzz Williams, Roy Williams, and Tony Bennett. But I've got no issue with anyone who might vote for Mike Krzyzewski, Leonard Hamilton, or Chris Mack. I think all 6 of them have done outstanding jobs, given, you know, certain circumstances that they've faced.
Mac probably can't win because of how they've faded down the stretch, right?
That's my guess. But I still think Louisville making the NCAA tournament is a victory for that program.
Yeah.
After what it's been through, and, you know, the roster turnover, and he brought in a bunch of grad transfers who have worked out really well, and Jordan Nwora has become probably the ACC's most improved player. If it's not him, it's John Mooney at Notre Dame. But no, I think Mac's done really well. And people say, Krzyzewski's got all these parade All-Americans or McDonald's and yada yada. Hello, recruiting is part of coaching. He recruits them. He gets them and he makes them better. I mean, he's done an outstanding job, and Roy Williams and or Tony Bennett could well go 16-2 in this league. I mean, I think
because of the Robinson thing, that's what elevates him, right?
Yes.
Because they were expected to be around this area.
I picked them fourth in preseason. I believe they finished in the preseason poll fifth.
And no one else has really had to deal with this much roster uncertainty this year, right?
Well, no, a lot of people have.
Well, none of the top-tier teams. And yes. for this length of time.
For an extent. I mean, Notre Dame and Miami have been ravaged all year long. And Virginia Tech, you can argue, has been ravaged all year long because Landers Nolly and Chris Clark never played
right.
a minute.
Yes.
If you'd have told me in preseason, all right, pick the ACC with the full knowledge that Virginia Tech's going to be without those two dudes.
And Robinson for
half the ACC season, I'd have picked them, I don't know.
They're on the precipice of missing the tournament.
Oh, absolutely, eighth or
ninth.
And
probably you'd say if it was before the season, they wouldn't even make the tournament based on that level of consternation among the roster.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So, no, I absolutely buzzes in the conversation.
Well, you mentioned Tony Bennett, and they didn't have much trouble against the Orange.
For a half, they did.
Right. The other half, not so much.
Did you watch much of it?
I didn't watch any of it. What, they win by 26, something like that, 25?
They won by 26. They outscored Syracuse in the second half, 47-19.
Yeah. Why is Syracuse having this much problem on offense?
Well, that was against Virginia.
But those issues are prevailing more than just this one game.
No, they have.
I just don't understand it.
And nor does Boeheim. So you're in good company.
I mean, Brissett and
Brissett has been terrible.
Well, he put his name in for the draft last year, right? Their top two guys were in discussion about leaving and going to the NBA.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's just been bad on offense, and Boeheim kind of singled him out the other night post-game. But to me, that game wasn't about Syracuse. That game was about Virginia. I mean, my goodness.
Battle, by the way, is the Tyus
Battle. Oh, yeah, Tyus Battle, yeah.
Who's been good, but I just don't anyway, that last night was about Virginia.
No, yeah, that game was about – they made 18 threes. Some from preposterous distances,
which is a good setting too, because the depth, you know, you get your eye to the weird depth issues in the Carrier Dome.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be like the facilities you're playing in later in the NCAA tournament.
Ty Jerome hit one from like one step past the big S at midcourt, and it wasn't because it was late in the shot clock and he had to let it fly. He just took it.
Well, when you're making that many threes, heat checks abound, right?
Yeah. And Kyle Guy, I think he airballed his first three-point attempt. If it wasn't an airball, it barely grazed the rim. And then he proceeds to make eight of his next nine. DeAndre Hunter went off. And, oh, by the way, Jerome had 14 dimes. They made 18 of 25 threes. That's 72%. And that is the most threes ever made in a ACC conference game since they moved the arc back to 20 feet 9 inches, which I believe was the 2008-09 season. Stunning display against a credible defense.
Who do they end this regular season with?
Saturday at home against Louisville.
Okay, so, I mean, not a cakewalk by any means.
But no.
If they beat Louisville, are they a one seed regardless of what happens in the ACC tournament?
Absolutely.
Are they a one seed regardless what happens the rest of the season?
I think it's very possible. And unless, let's say they lose to Louisville and then were to lose in the first, in their quarterfinal of the ACC tournament. Maybe, depending on how things played out elsewhere around the country, maybe they could fall off the one line. But even then, I mean, right now I'm not sure they're not, once again, the overall number one seed.
Gonzaga's been pretty good. I poo-pooed on Gonzaga a couple weeks ago.
No, they've been great.
I think they won every conference game by double digits.
Yes. 16-0 in all 16 by double digits.
Which is,
and I don't know what if that speaks more to Gonzaga or more to his league.
Well, maybe, but you know, San Francisco is a bubble team. St. Mary's has traditionally been pretty good, so it's not like they're doing this in, you know, the Northeast Conference.
No,
I mean, they're doing it in a conference that has been a two bid league for regularly over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the depth generally behind Gonzaga and St. Mary's has been low. Mm-hmm. But San Francisco has been pretty solid this year, and they've been in the discussion as an at-large team.
They have. And the way it could set up, you know, if Virginia beats Louisville on Saturday, Cavaliers clinch the one seed in Charlotte. If Virginia Tech beats Miami on Friday, the Hokies clinch the 5 seed in Charlotte.
Round two. Or the semifinals, I guess it would be.
Yeah. We could have a Virginia Tech Friday night, 7 p.m.
Oh, 7 p.m.
Yes.
Good for deadlines.
Crucial.
All right, so Carolina.
And Duke Carolina in the nightcap.
If Carolina beats Duke on Saturday, mm-hmm. I think they've locked up a 1 seed.
Locked up? Maybe.
And if Duke was to go on and win the ACC tournament, then I think the 3 ACC 1 seeds come into play.
Very well.
I think that has to be – maybe if Duke beats Carolina on Saturday and Carolina wins the ACC, but there has to be a combination of one of those teams winning and the other one winning the league.
Winning the tournament, yeah.
Because, you know, there's still some uncertainty. Tennessee got back their loss against Kentucky.
Emphatically.
Yes. So the SEC tournament winner is certainly going to be in the discussion.
Presuming it's one of the two. What if LSU wins the tournament?
They won't be a 1 seed.
No. Agreed.
There's no way for them to jump up that high. So I think Gonzaga is going to be the overall number one, assuming they don't get upset in the West Coast tournament. I think Virginia will be there. And then I think it's going to come down to, I think North Carolina, if they beat Duke, they're in as a 1 seed.
Could be. But I think that right now, you know, earlier on, as you were kind of projecting brackets and such, Virginia was probably not going to land in the East. And now I think there's a very strong possibility that Virginia will land in the East.
Because if they just win their next two, they've kind of insulated themselves as the best team in the best resume in the ACC.
Yeah, I think so. And that
even with two losses against Duke.
Yeah, and that would translate to Columbia the first weekend in Washington, D.C. for the regionals.
Not bad for travel.
Correct.
If you're an NCAA selection committee person, committee person. I don't know what the correct nomenclature for that is.
Committee member. Yeah.
And you see that Virginia has two losses to Duke, but they're 16-2 in league play. And Carolina has two wins over Duke, and they're 16-2 in league play. Doesn't that make a compelling case for Carolina, even though Carolina lost to Virginia head-to-head?
At home.
That
in Chapel Hill.
Isn't there an argument to be made that Carolina is a higher 1 seed than Virginia?
Just based on the results against Duke? No. I don't believe so.
That being the key piece of evidence that I'm producing, yeah.
No. I think Virginia would be seeded above Carolina. Now, if the Tar Heels were to beat Virginia in the ACC tournament, then maybe we'll have a discussion.
I was the one, you know, I all year I've been challenging the Tar Heels' consistency, mm-hmm. and I'm no longer bothered by that. I think they've risen above my concerns of their inconsistency, and now have certainly moved into a legitimate contender for the championship. You've Absolutely. Thought they were the whole time,
yeah.
But they've stepped it up in my view, and really can put another foot forward against Duke on Saturday.
Cam Johnson's first team all ACC, and I think, and Luke May will be probably on one of the three teams, and Kobe White, and now they've got some horses now.
Let's go down the list a little bit in the ACC and talk about some of the bubble teams.
There's only two.
Clemson.
Yep. And NC State.
I think NC State's probably in. Oof. And I think Clemson is out. What do you think?
I think you're wrong on both.
Really?
No,
you think Clemson's in?
No, but I don't think they're out either.
Oh, sorry. As today is presently configured, they're out. I think both of them can play. Actually, I think Clemson can play its way in with a strong performance in the tournament. And I think NC State, if they lose their next two, are going to be out. But I think if I was picking the field today, Clemson's out and NC State's in.
NC State's a fascinating case because for more than a decade now, the selection committee has stressed non-conference strength of schedule. And if your non-conference schedule is bad, it just, and the committee's trying to parse teams there at the end, that's one reason you give them to toss you aside. And NC State's strength of schedule, the last I saw, was 353rd out of 353.
Yeah, that's not great. It's not great from an argument. They didn't lose. They lost to Wake. That's one bad ACC loss. But all their other losses are to good teams in the league play. They have a win over at Auburn, which admittedly isn't as good as it was when they beat them. They lost to Wisconsin, which is a good loss, right? I think it was a close game.
Yeah, no.
But you're right. Their non-conference outside of Wisconsin and Auburn isn't much to look at.
No, it's a joke.
They won everything they were supposed to.
Yes,
but,
they did.
They beat Vanderbilt. I mean, I guess theoretically they thought maybe when they scheduled that it would have been something. Penn State was I don't know if Penn State was there. No, they played Wisconsin in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. So they played Penn State outside of it.
Yeah, Virginia Tech played Penn State.
And lost.
Yes, in the Big Ten Challenge.
But they played some mid-majors, and some of the mid-majors they played aren't exactly basketball powers. So, yeah, I mean, I think having a 500 record in the best league in the country is a big checkbox, right? And not having too many – the Wake loss is a bad one. But they didn't lose any of the bottom five or six outside of that. And they've got two – they've got one good, really good non-conference win. I don't know if I would say really good. One good non-conference win and one solid non-conference loss.
Yeah. I mean, Clemson desperately needs to beat Notre Dame and I think they play Notre Dame, and then they close with Syracuse at home.
If they don't beat Notre Dame, they're out, right?
It's going to be tough.
Then they close with Syracuse.
Syracuse at home, yeah.
Syracuse isn't on the bubble, but could Syracuse find their way into it?
Could.
If they lose their next two?
Yeah. Maybe. Well, you talk about losing to Clemson and then losing in the ACC tournament?
Because they're going to be playing a bad team in the first round of the ACC tournament.
One would think.
So you're talking about losing to a bubble team, and then you'd lose to you'd have a bad loss. Mm-hmm. Clemson's in the same boat. A loss to Notre Dame really is a spike in their resume,
because
Notre Dame's no good. And then they close with Syracuse, and then they were also playing an also ran right in the first round. Well, they'd be probably in the 8-9 or area.
They could very well be in the 8-9 game,
which is a must win, because that's NC State, right?
Could be.
And so then you're talking about maybe a play into the tournament. But what's Clemson's non-conference resume?
You mean non-conference strength of schedule?
Yeah. I mean, they played Georgia. Georgia's not very good.
No.
Georgia's actually terrible.
Yeah. Beat South Carolina.
They lost to Creighton. They lost to Nebraska.
Yeah, the Nebraska loss hurts.
Lost to Mississippi State. They beat Radford. They beat Lipscomb, which I never would have thought would have been a big win when they scheduled that one.
Clemson has five losses this year by 1 or 2 points.
Wow.
Yeah, including Saturday against Carolina.
Now, they have a loss against Miami, too, which is, it kind of cancels out NC State's loss to Wake, right? If you're comparing resumes, you both have a stinker of a loss in league play.
Yeah, and if it comes, you know, and Clemson and NC State only played once, and NC State won on the Braxton Beverly three at the buzzer after after Clemson botched it at the free throw line.
Do you think? I mean, the Carolina game is a devastating loss, right?
It could have almost sealed the deal
if they would have won.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. Because then, you're guaranteed 500 in league play, right? Now they've got to win their next two to get to 500.
Yeah, I don't know if they've been.
They're 7-9.
Yeah, they wouldn't have been guaranteed, but they'd have been on the brink.
Yeah, right. Much more likely because we assume that they're going to beat Notre Dame.
Yeah,
which maybe is a false. Yeah,
but
assumption.
Let's remember, losing records in your conference are not. They're not the albatross you might think. I mean, last year, five teams with losing conference records received at-large bids. That's the most ever, but five.
Yeah. Well, and we know there will be some this year.
And there very well could be, because I've sat down and started to sketch out the 36 at-larges, and it's not easy. If VCU wins the Atlantic 10 tournament, I think the Atlantic 10 could well be a one-bid league.
Really?
Dayton's kind of there, but I think that would be – maybe if the Flyers got to the final in Brooklyn – but in the Atlantic 10 is traditionally a multi-bid league. Then there are the bid thieves out there. Wofford. Does Wofford go ahead and take care of business in the Southern Conference?
Wofford's in.
Yes.
Regardless.
Absolutely.
So you're talking about Furman and Greensboro that could steal bids. Mm-hmm. Furman is I think, has a better resume or is closer to getting in than Greensboro.
Probably. I haven't looked at their respective team sheets that closely.
It seems like a lot of the projections I've looked at recently have had a lot of...
I mean, the Furman win at Villanova is huge.
A lot of the last four in, next four in, have been have power conference teams. That some of the mid-majors have either fallen down below or have jumped up, like... I think I saw Belmont as a 12 seed.
Belmont
that
Belmont
gets you in.
And Murray.
Yeah.
Belmont and Murray from the OVC. Could the OVC get two? Could Conference USA? I'm still not convinced that Old Dominion won't get in if it reaches the league final. We'll see.
I just noticed on Bracketology on Joe Lenardi's projection they're a 13 seed. Well, if you're 13 and you win out and lose in a conference championship game, you may have played yourself up to a 12. And if you're a 12, then you're – you don't think so? Because they're not going to get a lot of help in that league.
Yeah. If you're an automatic, that's Lenardi. I mean, I don't think he's the be-all, end-all by any stretch.
His website's just easy to find.
And I think everyone who tries to project the field – is essentially flying blind this year because of the new metric, and you don't know how the committee is going to use this new tool.
Well, I think Utah State was a team that was a little bit on the bubble, and they may have locked theirs in with that win against Nevada last week.
I think that was really important.
So, you know, I always think the mid-majors are a little bit more interesting, mostly because it's the fascination of what I don't know anything about them. I don't watch Belmont basketball a whole lot. I know Rick Byrd. But I don't watch a lot of Belmont basketball.
Right. And you know John Moran at Murray State. But
yes.
Yeah, other than that.
It's either a coach or a star that you know about from those mid-majors. So I know, you know, that Rick Byrd has done dynamite work at Belmont and could have gone to bigger schools over the years, and he just has consistently stayed at Belmont. But there's a mystery to it. Like, there's a mystery to seeing Belmont play to get in rather than, do I really want to watch Arizona State again?
Yeah.
Do I really care to see Temple in this tournament? or do I want to see San Francisco, a team that I don't know anything about?
You talk about teams that might have locked themselves in. I think Central Florida may well have by winning at Houston over the weekend.
That was a huge win.
Yeah.
Huge win. At Houston.
Yes.
At College Game Day was there.
Yeah. I think the AAC may have turned itself into a two-bid league there. Or no, excuse me, three-bid, because Cincinnati's getting in too.
Yeah, that was huge. You mentioned Old Dominion. We talked about this last week, all the Virginia schools that are kind of in the mix.
Still are.
Old Dominion will be the number one seed going into Conference USA.
Yeah, senior night tonight at the Constance Center for Ahmad Caver and B.J. Stiff.
A lot of basketball games those guys have played down in Norfolk. Norfolk State's they've locked up the number one seed in the MEAC.
Yes.
Hampton's on a roll in the Big South.
Yeah, although they have to go on the road to the number one seed next.
They do, which they beat, right? Is it Radford, one seed?
No, Campbell.
Oh, that flopped.
Yeah.
They did have one at Radford this year.
Mm-hmm.
So VCU is going to be the top seed in their tournament, right?
Yeah, they clinched the A-10 outright last night with George Mason. I think Mason scored 35 or 36 points, fewest points ever by a VCU opponent. The Rams are among the best defensive clubs in the country.
And they're in regardless.
I believe so. The non-conference strength of schedule is off the charts.
Yeah. So that would be a bid stealer if someone else won that league.
Mm-hmm. Much like last year it was.
Yes.
When Davidson won the tournament and knocked Notre Dame out of the field.
Radford, if they won. Radford's not – Old Dominion's the only other school in the state that has
at-large chance.
Because Liberty's fallen off pace a little.
Yeah.
The big thing about being the one seed, though, is you've clinched postseason play. I mean, you're going to get Old Dominion and Norfolk State, worst case scenario, are going to be in the NIT, which is nothing to sneeze at, especially for a Norfolk State. Nor for Old Dominion. It's been a while since they've been in either the NIT or mm-hmm. the NCAA tournament, right? They've played in a couple of those other tournaments postseason.
Yeah, but then they were in the NIT a few years back and went to New York.
So this is it's big that they've done that. And they navigated an uncertain schedule. Because of the flexible scheduling down the stretch.
Yeah, which they'll finish on the road this week. I believe they're at Birmingham, home against Southern Miss tonight, and then I believe they close at Birmingham.
You don't think – so they – but the Conference USA tournament, if you're the one seed, you only got to win once to get into the championship game, right?
No,
or do you
twice.
Have to win twice? So if they win the next four, you don't think they can push themselves to a 12?
If they win the next four and lose in the championship game, I think they would get a thorough vetting. And like everyone else, people always ask me, well, if this team does X, are they in? It all depends what happens around the rest of the country. What happens with Clemson and North Carolina State? What happens in the Southern Conference? What happens in the A-10? What happens in the West Coast? All those, it's all interconnected. There is no... You just don't exist in a bubble.
Well, then, if they're an at-large, they're probably going to Dayton.
Probably, yes.
But if you're a fan of Old Dominion or Conference USA, some of the tournaments you should keep an eye on would be the Atlantic Sun, maybe, with Lipscomb.
Maybe.
Definitely.
Definitely the A-10.
Definitely A-10.
Definitely Southern.
Mm-hmm. West Coast, maybe.
Yes, with Gonzaga.
You're talking about the Ohio Valley with Murray State and Belmont.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are some of the ones that you would probably keep a close eye on.
And then
right?
The Mountain West with Nevada.
Hofstra can't get in unless they win, probably.
No,
right?
CAA is a one-bid league.
So those are the games. If Old Dominion is going to get in on as an at-large, those are the ones that need to have the favorites
in. They need chalk.
And then there's, the other 20 leagues or 16, I'm probably overestimating, 12 to 15 one-bid leagues where you can't have, they won't matter because those teams can't get an at-large.
And then you don't want to have some total outlier in one of the Power 5 leagues rise up either.
Right, which the Pac-12 is one that could be a problem.
Very good point, because if Arizona State does not solidify its at-large credentials, it could, and Washington wins the conference tournament, the Pac-12 could be a one-bid lead.
There's going to be a lot of Huskies fans around the country, right?
Yes.
Because they're in probably regardless.
Oh, they are in.
So Arizona State is right now firmly on the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
So worst case, I mean, you could, most teams could live with Arizona State winning the league, but anybody else,
right?
There's trouble there, right?
Mm-hmm. That's a bid thief.
Is there any other leagues that are probably guaranteed to? I mean, so you're talking about the Southern Conference. If we know Wofford's in, and Furman is getting closer. If someone lower on the totem went, like Mercer makes a run through the conference tournament, maybe that probably boots out Furman.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are those teams. But
Southern, it's hard to imagine the Southern, which has never received an at-large bid, then getting two in the same season.
Right, three teams from the Southern Conference.
Yeah, getting two at-larges.
The Mountain West would be the Utah State, Nevada.
Yeah.
And they're both probably in.
If somebody else other than they were to win the league.
Well, there is going to be a lot. Everything we've talked about is going to play out in front of our eyes over the next 2 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be down in North Carolina for the ACC tournament.
I will.
You and Norm will be both down there.
My 36th in a row.
That's a lot. That's a lot. I've been alive for more than that.
Congratulations.
I haven't covered that many. it's fascinating. Both of us love this time of year. It's almost an overload because there's so much happening on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah. Just trying to digest it all and what it all means and process it. And, okay, now what's this do to this team seed? And you don't sleep much, but that's all right too.
Yeah.
Stay up late and watch hoops.
Well, next week, we'll have to see how this works from a schematic standpoint, because it doesn't make a lot of sense for you guys to turn around a podcast while you're down there, because by the time a lot of people hear it, the next gig games will be happening. So perhaps you guys, if Virginia wins it or Tech wins it, can put something together at the end of the tournament. If not, we'll be back to chat about Selection Sunday, you know, 11 or 12 days from now. That'll be fun because we have a good time going through.
Oh, yeah, we'll have an actual bracket. We'll make predictions that expose us as foolish.
That's right. I'll just take both sides. I can see this and this happening. One last thing to, I think, close on this week, maybe of interest is the Bryce Harper deal. You know, a lot of people around here are Nationals fans. It's easy to get to a game. You take Tiny Teal to games.
Absolutely.
Up at Nationals Park. What were your thoughts?
I think he's in for a rude awakening. He's been coddled in D.C. It's not a terribly harsh baseball town by any stretch, and even during the lean times he was in large measure deified. First two times he strikes out with runners on second and third and two down, it's going to get rough in Philadelphia, and how he reacts to that will be fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue he's had as much rope as anyone to not ever win a playoff series. The Nationals never won a playoff series.
Correct.
And he was still thought of as a megastar. And you know, there's few places in the country where you can have that kind of a drought and still be seen as, you know, someone who's above criticism for the most part.
Yeah.
And his career has been so rollercoastery. I mean, he had that one year where I think he won the MVP and his WAR was at 10. And last year it was around 1. Like, you don't see.
Man, what did he hit last year? 260?
He wasn't very good. He came on late. He played well towards the end of the season. But he's had some really big ebbs and flows in his career. 13 years is a long time to give someone a contract, man.
I'll say.
I mean, that's a long time.
And allegedly know how, I mean.
You want to play a fun game.
Yeah.
Find out where you're going to be, at what age you'll be at the end of that contract. And then, I mean, I'm about the age that he's going to be at the end of the contract. And I understand he keeps his body in a little bit better order than I do. But I don't want to go out and play 162 games right now.
I just hope to be upright.
Yeah, there was, I was telling my dad maybe 5 or 6 years ago when he first started, Bryce Harper started running. I'm like, Dad, think about how old you're going to be when this guy retires. He's going to be like, think about how old I'm going to be. I'm going to be under the ground by the time this guy retires.
I think about how old I'm going to be when Tiny Teal graduates high school.
Oh, we don't need to talk about, we don't need to talk about that. So we don't get into sad things. but yeah, it's going to be fascinating. I think maybe the reason he's extended the contract so long is to have a lower annual value because they think maybe they can make a run at Mike Trout. In a couple years, Mike Trout being a Philly kid.
Millville, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Oh, sorry. Metropolitan Philadelphia. Yeah. But it'd be interesting to see if they get those two guys, then you're talking about a whole nother ball game. But, yeah. You know, we've tended to learn in sports that projecting a free agent 2-3 years out is not the best course of action.
No, it's not.
All right, well. Stay tuned over the next week. You know where to follow Teal on Twitter. He will be live in color down in North Carolina, him and Norm, following the ACC tournament. Check back with us. If you don't hear anything late next week, then don't worry. Nothing happened to us. Yeah. We'll be here to break down the bracket the next week.
Absolutely. Happy March, y'all, and enjoy as much as we do.